Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to Intuit from Vulture and New York Magazine. I'm your host, Sam Sanders. And I'm joined this episode by dear friend of the show, with multiple appearances, Alex Abad-Santos. We're going to make a little sense of the week in pop culture. Alex is a senior correspondent at Vox, and he writes about, quote, what society obsesses over. Alex, welcome.
Hi, Sam.
This is your third time with us?
It's third time's the charm. Hopefully, there you go. Hopefully we got it this time.
We got it. We did it, Joe. Yes. So, Alex, we have three things to talk about this week. The Flash hits theaters this weekend, and it's DC's attempt to remake its own cinematic universe.
Right.
To, like, compete with Marvel. We'll also discuss a new show on HBO that's an extension of the Sam Levinson universe. It's got The Weeknd and Lily Rose Depp, and it's called The Idol, and I think it's horrible. And then a discussion of Ultimatum Queer Love, this truly unhinged reality dating competition show that proves that lesbians can be just as awful as everybody else.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
So before we talk about all of these topics, I have a simple question for you. Of these three things, the movie The Flash, the HBO show The Idol, and the Netflix reality show Ultimatum Queer Love, which would you F, which would you marry, and which would you kill?
Oh my gosh.
Go quickly. Come on, go quickly.
Oh, I would F The Flash, probably kill The Idol, and then marry Queer Love, because I feel like Queer Love is like the least harmful out of all of them.
Although that's a low bar.
Yes. The bar is subterranean, but like it's messy and it's like fun, and it's the consequences are so low on it, right? Whereas like with the other stuff, you're just like, do we really want the discourse and everything else that's happening with the other stuff? Like, you could just mindlessly love like Ultimatum, and it's also, I mean, it's part of that Netflix, I guess, brain trust and hive mind of just like dystopian dating shows. And I love
Netflix's
those.
Secret sauce is really crappy reality shows. That's what they do best.
I know. Like, if you were to charge the American public, like if Netflix was really, really smart, they'd be like, okay, if you want to pay a premium for our dystopian dating shows where no one ever gets married, everyone hates each other by the end, we would pay. I don't need another like Scorsese film. I don't need any of those. I just need Netflix to give me terrible, terrible dating shows.
Bam. There you go. There you go. We will talk more about Netflix in a bit, but We have to talk. We have to start off with a discussion of The Flash. This is a new superhero movie coming out this weekend, and it has a lot riding on it. So The Flash is supposed to help give DC Comics its own multiverse in the spirit of Marvel's multiverse. But that might not happen. There's a ton of drama with the lead actor. We'll talk about that. But to start, what is this movie about, and who exactly is The Flash?
That's so big. I mean, if we're going from like the very beginning, like the simplest explanation, I think you got it, was The Flash is basically their attempt, or their Warner Brothers and DC Comics attempt, to reset its superhero universe, right?
Because yes, and we should say DC superheroes include people like Superman, Batman,
Wonder Woman,
Green Lantern, Wonder Woman. Right. Those are all DC comic figures. And DC, for the longest time, has been kind of second fiddle to Marvel, because Marvel has built out this cinematic universe in which every movie is related, so everyone has to see all of them. And we know that for the last 15 years or so, it's just been Marvel movie after Marvel movie after Marvel movie. And now DC wants the same thing.
I mean, DC has always tried to do the same thing, right? Like, they've kind of followed, like, they saw, like, what Marvel was doing, or Warner Brothers saw what Marvel was doing, and they were like, well, what if we did the same thing? And it's just like, and what you'll notice is that, like, the DC superheroes are people that we know. They're A-listers, right? Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, otherwise known as the Trinity in comic books, right? Like, they were much bigger
than them.
Like, no one knew who Iron Man was. No one knew who Thor was. But everyone knew who Wonder Woman was, like, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
Yeah. So then what happened? Why hasn't DC built its own multiverse yet if they have the bigger superheroes?
Sam, the movies are so bad.
Okay. Tell me more.
So I think, like, when, like, what happened, like, after, like, the Christopher Nolan, like, Batman stuff, right? Like,
that was great.
Those are regarded as, like, the best, like, the very peak of, I guess, superhero movie storytelling. Before Black Panther came along, before Marvel came along, actually, too. It was just, like, this was the bar. And then they got, like, Man of Steel, which was, like, fine. It was Zack Snyder, and it was his vision of, like, this gritty, and I think that's where you got this whole idea of, like, a gritty superhero, like DC couldn't exist in pop culture if it was, like, squeaky clean the way it is in the comics. So in the movies, it was just like, let's go for something grittier. Let's go for something a little bit more, I guess, murdery. And so I guess, like, what you see is you get a lot of hits and misses. Like, you get Batman versus Superman, you get Justice League, which was a stinker. And then, like, but in Justice League, that's where we get The Flash, who is actually kind of, like, a big deal in comics because he's, like, the fourth guy out, right? Like, it's like Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, and then it's The Flash.
And The Flash. Right. Okay. And The Flash, his superpower is that he can travel faster than the speed of light.
Right.
Okay.
Super speed.
And
he's
so,
basically a cheat code. He's okay. He could do anything. I mean, theoretically, in the movie, it establishes that this guy can move faster than the speed of light. And once you move that fast, you break time. And once you break time, you can go back.
You can do anything.
Right.
Okay. So then this character, The Flash, with this movie, The Flash, is supposed to be the thing that jumpstarts the DC comic universe, gives DC a multiverse, and finally helps it really compete with Marvel. All of this sounds great, but the person playing The Flash is full of drama, and that might jeopardize the launch of this movie. I'm talking about Ezra Miller. Who are they, and what's their drama?
The drama is that Ezra Miller is extremely talented. Perks of Being a Wallflower, also in The Fantastic Beasts, also another controversial franchise. But their personal life is just peppered with legal trouble, basically law enforcement stuff. Lots of run-ins with law enforcement, lots of charges about, like, being arrested for abuse, arrested for trespassing, and then also, like, this vaguely, like, accused of, like, kind of maybe or maybe not starting a cult underage people.
Yeah, I've been reading these stories for over a year, but it's been issue after issue after issue for a while. Why is DC still letting this person lead the film after all of that?
I mean, I think what no one is saying and what the story is that there's a lot of money at stake. So basically back in October, James Gunn and Peter Safran were appointed like the heads of Warner Brothers DC comic book universe. Like basically they're the Kevin Feige of DC. And they they were like, here are all the movies that we're doing. And they basically scrapped everything, right? Like Gal Gadot's gone, Ben Affleck's gone, Henry Cavill's gone. Those are the
three big stars. All of that. I'm fine with all of that. Let me tell you who's not my favorite actor, Gal Gadot. I'm sorry.
Right. But The Flash and Ezra Miller were still on board, and so was Jason Momoa's Aquaman. And so you have these movies coming out that basically almost have no future unless they do bonkers money.
Mm.
I think a few months ago, Ezra Miller was like released a statement that was apologizing, and they said that they were working on their mental health, and then basically has been just completely shut out of the promotion of this movie.
This is what's crazy. So like... usually, when you have a summer blockbuster that has a superhero in it, the lead of that film is all over the place doing press to promote that movie and get a really big opening weekend. They can't do that with Ezra Miller because there's too much drama around Ezra. So all I've really seen are a bunch of trailers which point out that Michael Keaton makes a cameo.
Interesting group. What's Mel?
Well, that was supposed to be a surprise.
Is that?
That was supposed to
be a surprise?
That's supposed to be like the surprise.
I already know. Is this a way to like make up for the fact that Ezra can't do press right now?
I mean, that is not their official story, right? But like anyone that watches these movies and knows like the way Hollywood works is like, we are going to release all of like the surprises and the juicy bits and all this stuff so that you will see this movie in spite of its main star, who were kind of like waiting to see how much this movie does before they cut them loose or they go on with them. And it's just kind of the weirdest strategy, right? Could you like could you imagine Barbie without Margot Robbie? Like if Margot if they were like, Margot Robbie's done, Margot Robbie, we're not seeing her for a year.
Yeah. Okay, so the next question, why do it this way? Why have a summer blockbuster in which the lead can't promote the film? There are other situations where the film is just pushed or scrapped or reshot. Batgirl was totally canceled. The newest Avengers movie with Jonathan Majors has been delayed given his drama. Why this strategy from DC with Ezra? It makes no sense.
It makes no sense, and it doesn't really feel equal in that if you're comparing this to Jonathan Majors, who was... I think arrested for domestic abuse and basically has gone through the press and like has seen a lot of his sponsorships drop. Like it's, you could see like there is an unequal reaction to what's happening.
Why do you think that is?
I mean,
one of them's black.
I mean, racism. And it's not saying that Jonathan Majors should, or like anyone that's like been arrested should like get the Ezra Miller treatment. It just, it should just be like, we should take these things seriously. Like this isn't just like, it isn't like just shoplifting a candy bar. It's like, there are, I think, families that filed protection orders against them.
Yeah.
For it's underage people. And it's just like, well, it's very weird that like, okay, well, Jonathan Majors has seen basically his career put to a halt, and then this is still going on.
Totally. All right, what we haven't talked about yet, Alex, is whether or not this movie is actually good. DC is saying it's phenomenal. What do you think?
I mean, my mom thinks I'm phenomenal.
Right? yeah.
Sorry, Mom, but it's just like, well, of course DC is going to say that. I mean, I saw the movie... it is fun. The Michael, like Michael Keaton zipping around with the Danny Elfman score. I mean, who, like, if you're a millennial of a certain age or a Gen Xer of a certain age, it's going to get you. But is it the best multiverse movie out there? Like, and I'm so sick of the multiverse. Like, I'm like, you know, do you remember like when Sex and the City was going on? They were just like, New York is like the fifth character. The multiverse is basically the fifth character in all these superhero movies.
It's too much. Well, and like at a certain point, it starts to feel cheap because it's just used to continue IP extension.
Right.
In a multiverse, no one ever dies. No one ever has to go away, and they can always be resurfaced. And I'm going to be honest. I had my fill of the multiverse with Everything Everywhere All at Once. Mm-hmm. Good for that movie. Good for those Oscars. Let's find the next thing. I'm multiversed out. The multiverse has won an Oscar. Move on.
Right. Well, I will say... am I allowed to say that, like, Across the Spider-Verse probably is the best use of the multiverse.
That's the one. Yeah.
Because it's just like, I think the thing with these movies, and The Flash is guilty of it too, is like these movies promise like endless worlds of like limitless possibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then like when you actually look with the multiverses, it's just like the same world.
It's the same world with the same characters over and over and over again.
And it's like, I don't want to see that. I want to see, like, if you're going to give me a multiverse, give me, like an Octopus Flash, right? Or give me something weird and wacky and just, like, take a big swing. Yes. Do not give me the same like, four people being like, okay, well, there's...
We're back.
Yeah.
So, I guess, to wrap up this segment... Everything about this movie, The Flash, I find disturbing. I find the fact that it's getting released after Ezra Miller's drama disturbing. I find the fact that DC wants to use this to become Marvel number two disturbing. I find that the way Ezra is treated compared to Jonathan Majors is disturbing. Nothing about The Flash makes me feel good. Not even Michael Keaton.
Well, wait until you figure out that there's weird CGI happening with dead past Warner Brothers actors.
Oh, Lord. All right, after the break, Alex and I talk about HBO's The Idol, a truly horrible show. I also want to remind you, listeners, we have a summer book club. We're going to be reading Brandon Taylor's new book. It's called The Late Americans. Read it now. Read it next month, because we're going to talk about it with Brandon on the show in August.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from 26.2 Team Milk and their new docuseries, Running Sucks.
Is running the worst?
Yeah.
Do you love it? Do you hate it?
I hate it so much. I hate it so freaking much.
That you're a real runner now!
I hate it.
I'm Abby Ayers, a 37-year-old mom from Utah who found herself running across the Manhattan Bridge in my first race ever.
Running Sucks celebrates women who run and the running communities that carry them across the finish line.
Running helped me in so many ways postpartum.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
For every person like you, I'm telling you, you belong, and I'm telling you, you can do it.
I never thought the words would leave my mouth, but yes, I'm planning on running a marathon. I can't even say it without laughing, because, like, who would have thought?
Watch Running Sucks at runningsucktheseries.com and learn more about how Team Milk is helping women runners across the country conquer their next course.
A show that need not have a multiverse ever, ever, ever. It's on HBO right now. It's called The Idol. Two episodes are currently out. And I gotta say, Alex, it is one of the worst shows I've ever seen in my life. Set the show up for our listeners. What is it? Who is it? And why?
I mean, it is a show that's basically a commentary on Britney Spears that doesn't want you to...
Also, leave her alone. We've talked enough about Britney. Is there anything new to say about Britney Spears?
Well,
Britney alone.
Exactly. But it's too cool, or it thinks it's too cool to ever tell you that it's about Britney Spears.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's basically comes from the director, the showrunner of the HBO show Euphoria, which is high schoolers who aren't really like high schoolers. Like, they're dealing with they're like 30-year-old high schoolers dealing with like adult problems. And it's just
all of them are on drugs. All of them have problems. Yeah.
Lots of sex, lots of just like, it's a show that's more vibes than content. Like, it's a show that's more vibes.
I say to my
vibes.
Friends that Euphoria is actually just a long form music video.
Right. That is basically what The Idol is, except it's even more on the nose about what happens to a pop starlet when she falls from grace.
Case in point, I'm just worried she's having another psychotic break.
No, she never had a psychotic break. Never had one. She was just exhausted.
So this show, The Idol, it is a creation of Sam Levinson and The Weeknd, like the pop star. And the lead is Lily Rose Depp, who is Johnny Depp's daughter. Is that it?
A Nepo baby, yes.
Okay. And so she stars as this pop star who has just had a mental breakdown, but her team is trying to re-spark her career and get her another hit. In the midst of that, she meets a Hollywood cult leader played by The Weeknd. The reviews for this show are horrible. People involved with the show have said a lot of it felt like torture porn. I watched an episode and a half, and it was quite disturbing to me. Some of the depictions of sex and drug use were just really, really troubling. How bad is this show?
I mean, I think the thing about this show is that from the very first bat, like, who is the biggest pop star in the world named Jocelyn? Like, in what world does the name Jocelyn...
Also, like, if she's the biggest pop star in the world, yeah. Like, also, if she's the biggest pop star in the world, why are the songs they have for her in the show so horrible?
They're so horrible, but they come around back to being like good horrible because they're so bad, and it's just like the most innocuous lyrics. I'm just a freak, yeah. You know I want it bad. But it's also, yeah, like, who in the In what world are we propping up a woman, like a white girl named Jocelyn, and being like, wow, she's the baddie. Like, she is up there with Rihanna and Beyonce, Jocelyn. Jocelyn works in finance.
Jocelyn is in HR. Jocelyn has to sign off on your vacation request, okay? Yeah, like, she's not a pop star.
Jocelyn sends you back your form and is like, you didn't do this right. Please, and then, like, CC's your boss.
That's the wrong project code. That's Jocelyn. What's so weird about this too, it's like one of the kind of accessory actresses on the show is a member of Blackpink who actually ends up in one of the episodes doing the choreo that Jocelyn's supposed to do better than Jocelyn can do it. It's all right. So weird.
Well, I think what it is that it's two different shows competing to be one show.
Explain.
You have, so basically what Sam Levinson and The Weeknd have created is this kind of, and I think, like, if we go all the way back, it premiered in Cannes, and it was basically when stuff premieres in Cannes, it's just, like, it's supposed to be edgy and buzzy. And then leading up to the show, all that you heard was, like, we're going to shock you. We're going to just, like, we're taking TV to a place it's never been before, and you're just like, well, this is the guy who does Euphoria. It's going to be edgy. There's going to be lots of sex and lots of boobs and whatever. And then when it came out, everyone was just like, this is what all the hype was about. And then so, like, at the heart of it, there's a show about, like, this pop starlet's fall from grace, which is basically, like, any pop starlet. Like, I think the one that comes to mind is Britney. And it's just, like, when she enters her bad girl era.
Yeah.
And so Jocelyn enters her bad girl era. She meets this guy named Tedros, who is played by The Weeknd. And The Weeknd, the whole meta thing about The Weeknd is this is a guy who's also been a pop star, reinvented himself multiple times, is a visual artist, and, like, goes into full character when he sells an album.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I mean, that's an interesting story, right? Like, I want to hear what this guy's thoughts on Hollywood and the music industry is.
But you don't get that. What you get is The Weeknd's character as this cult leader. He starts to manipulate the lead in ways that are really troubling and problematic.
I mean, it'd be easier if I moved in. Yeah. For work purposes.
I'd like that.
There's a sexual tension between these two characters from the start.
Right.
But it's played out in really disturbing ways that have caused even folks involved with the show to call it torture porn. There's one scene where he, like, puts a plastic bag over the pop star's head and seems to, like, try to choke her out, but it's sexual and you're supposed to, like, I don't know. It's really disturbing. And it seemed as if everything involved with this show from the start has been disturbing. So the first director of this project, she exited after shooting 80% of the show. And then Sam Levinson and The Weeknd came in to reshoot it. And they said the previous stuff that had been shot before had leaned too far into a, quote, female perspective. So there was weirdness from the start. The shoot was delayed. And now we have this thing that just feels like it's toxic to women. I don't know. It feels off, man. It feels off.
The way I describe it is, do you remember, like, teenage boys before, like, porn was available on the internet? Like, they would, like, go on, like, the Spice Channel and watch, like, the scrambled wavy porn that was happening there, or they'd, like, stay up and wait for, like, Cinemax after dark.
And oh my God. But much more expensive.
Right. It kind of feels like those boys made this show and somehow we're getting it through some kind of time warp. And you're just like, because I think the thing is just like, there's really, I mean, the second part of the show, right, is that there is a record label that is dependent on Jocelyn to sell a bunch of like records and sell. And like, mm-hmm. there's an interesting thing there with, and her record label exec is played by Jane Addams, who's doing an amazing job.
But she's in a different show. She's like, they all are acting as if they're in right. different shows.
They're in a comedy, basically. It's like, and that's a good show, whatever the record label is in, because it's basically Veep.
Oh, will you let people enjoy sex, drugs, and hot girls, okay? Stop trying to cockblock America.
No, Nikki, I'm not.
And you're just like, and they're just like, how do you deal with this pop star who doesn't really have a talent? Like, she's not very good.
She's not good at singing, not good at dancing. She's cute and people care about her, but like,
but
that's
wouldn't
about it.
You love that show if it was just like a Veep about like a bad pop star? Like, that is a funny show that they accidentally made trying to sell us show all the sex.
Yeah, this show can't make fun of itself. It needs to make fun of itself. So the premiere of The Idol has total about 3.6 million viewers. That's not great. Is this show a hit? Does HBO say this show is a hit? Is it capturing the zeitgeist in the way that Sam Levinson and The Weeknd hoped it would?
I do not think it's a hit. I think we've been trained by HBO to be like, we need a Sunday show. And I think
and they
that,
just keep giving us Sunday shows. And it's well, like, well, Lotus is over. Here's a new one.
White Lotus, Succession, and then then Succession left, and it left on that high note, and then they were just like, we're going to give you The Idol. And everyone was kind of trained to be on like Sunday night duty, right? Like 9 p.m. Sunday night, let's like fire up the HBO. And then this comes on and you're just like, oh, I don't think this is not the same. One of these is not the same.
Okay.
We can hate watch, right? Is that allowed?
Let's do it. Let's start it. The Intuit Hate Watch Club is officially called to order. Let's meet up on Twitter next Sunday.
DM me your thoughts. Please tell me.
Yes. All right. So we've had a discussion of a movie and a show that are so-so, which means I want to end talking about a show that is actually freaking phenomenal. I'm talking about The Ultimatum, Queer Love. What is this show? It has fully incepted me. It is bonkers, insane, and some of the best TV I've seen this year.
Wait, why do you think it's the best?
It's high drama. High drama. So how do we set this show up? It is a reality show in which, is it five or six couples? Five queer couples, five lesbian couples, come to this reality show with an ultimatum.
I feel like I found my person.
You'll choose someone and move in together in a trial marriage. And then you'll do the same thing all over again with the person that you arrived with. And whether you leave here engaged, single, or newly in love, each of you will decide what your future holds.
One of the partners wants to get married. The other one has cold feet. And to figure out if they should get married or not, all the couples break up and start dating other people that have come down there. And then they choose their new partners and they have a practice marriage with those new partners for 3 weeks. Then after those 3 weeks, they can decide if they want to marry the new partner, if they want to go back to the old partner and marry them, or if they want to be single. And let me tell you, I never knew lesbians could be so messy, but I love it. Give me the popcorn. This is peak for me. I love it. Do you like it?
Well, it's so weird because you're just like, well, I feel like coming onto the show, like when you sign like the waiver and you sign the agreement, you're basically kissing your relationship goodbye.
You're saying F my relationship.
Right. Like
in what world does it make sense for a couple that is talking about marriage to go on a reality show and say, let's break it up for 3 weeks.
And then come go back to each other while it's all on camera with all these, and then it's just like all the couples know each other, which I think is the conceit of it. Like that's a big part of it is like they all enter it knowing each other and knowing that they're going to date each other and knowing that their partners are all going to date each other.
Yeah, it's
and
wild.
And then it's just like for 3 weeks, you have to pretend to be married to someone, which is like, what does that even mean to pretend to be married to someone?
It means, because queer love is like this, it means that a few of the couples bring their dogs for right. the 3 weeks,
right.
and the dogs become a big topic of tension. There are fights over, like, whether the dog can be in the bed. I'm like, oh, this is peak queer. This is so queer.
The dog then, should, wait, hold on. The dog should never be in the bed. Like, the dog has dirt from the outside. If you're
so
asking
do you.
A stranger.
So do you.
If you're asking so a stranger to sleep in your bed, you cannot ask them to sleep with a dog in the bed.
Well, Tiff,
that is a red flag. That
is a red flag. Tiff got into a fight with their new partner because they were like, my dog is my child and you will respect my dog. It
right.
was peak queer.
I don't care if you have the most gorgeous face, the most gorgeous body, the most gorgeous personality, and the most supportive system. If you don't like my dog, you can get the fuck out.
I mean, what's also kind of fascinating about this show is that, like, there's a lot of therapy speak, and there's a lot of therapy speak that's, like, weaponized. That's like...
Yo, it's funny. I was watching more of this with my partner last night, and he is a therapist, and halfway through one of the episodes, he was like, oh, I can tell that all these people have gone to therapy, to which I said, everyone except Vanessa.
Everyone except Vanessa. Vanessa is just here for... Vanessa, who is maybe an influencer, and is very, very attractive... Kind of looks like an Idina Menzel, like, creature.
Yeah.
Comes on the show, and she's just, like, basically, like, oh, yeah, does everyone want to fuck? And everyone's like, no, we want to get married. And she's just like, oh, okay, I thought this was a different show. I thought this was a different vibe.
Two favorite people, definitely Lexi, but I'm also really into her ex-girlfriend, Ray. It's a shit show.
And then everyone's yeah. just like... Oh, she's the villain. She's not here for the right intentions. And you're just like, what is the right intentions of a show that's asking you to blow up and crater your relationship?
Exactly. At least Vanessa keeps it real. So Vanessa, she comes in hot. And before you know it, she's dating two partners who were together and is very open and saying, I'm dating both of them. And what?
Yeah.
She gets matched up with someone. She's trying to get in those pants right away. Eventually... Other couples and other folks that are on the show try to call her out. It's a mess. It's wild.
The messiest. But it's also like, if, like, isn't that the true, like, sign of equality? If, like, queer people can get on a Netflix dating show and just be super messy. Like, we don't really have, like, any big network dating shows that focus on queer people.
I mean, yeah, there are lots of things that queer people don't have, that straight people have, that I don't want.
Right, right.
I will say I love this show for disproving every funny yet rude stereotype we have about queer couples, lesbian couples. This idea of, you know, the U-Haul shows up on the second date. Mm-hmm. This idea of partnering for life and being sedate and quiet. No, buddy. This ain't it.
This is mess.
This is different. This is mess. So we've talked about the three big topics that I wanted to talk about this week. The DC comic book movie, The Flash, the HBO pop star drama, The Idol, and the Netflix queer dating show, Ultimatum Queer Love. I feel like your verdict on all three of these is see The Flash if you want to. Definitely skip The Idol. But for sure, watch Queer Ultimatum.
Yes. It's a nice binge to have. And it's like, well, and the consequences are so low. Like, it's just like these people were going to break up anyway. Like, mm-hmm. no one is going on this show to save the relationship.
Exactly.
Except maybe Aussie. But like, no one is.
Oh, Aussie. Aussie needs years of work. Aussie's way to avoid it.
Right.
Don't get me started. One last thing to cleanse the vibes. I want to play you a new song that is my kind of bop of the week.
Hi, Big Frida.
Hi, Gracie.
Big Frida and a YouTube Kids show.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream.
They made a song together. I can't even, there are no words for it. It's just really, really good. Can we play a little bit of it for Alex?
Let's row, let's row, let's row, let's row, let's row the boat.
You hear that bass?
Oh my God, the bounce. The bounce is so good.
Listen, if The Idol had songs like this, I'd watch.
If Beyonce needs to put that on the Renaissance tour.
Yo, I will be back in a stadium if Beyonce does that. Let's roll the credits on that note. Beyonce and Big Frida doing a Gracie's Corner song about rowing the boat. I like that idea. Intuit is hosted by me, Sam Sanders. My wonderful guest this week is Alex Abad Santos. He writes about culture for Vox. The show is produced by Janae West, Travis Larchuk, Gabby Grossman, Jelani Carter, and Taka Zen. Our fearless editor is Jordana Hochman. Our engineer is Daniel Turek. Our music is composed by Breakmaster Cylinder. And the executive producer of audio at Vox Media is Nishat Kurwa. Listeners, we're back next Tuesday with a brand new episode. Till then, keep rowing your boats.
Why do you run? Why does anyone?
I always thought that runners loved running, and that's not the case. Most runners hate running, but they choose to do it.
In the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers learns why women runners everywhere are driven to go the distance.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
Team Milk is about fueling women's performance and helping them along their marathon journeys. You can sign up now for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon taking place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. Learn more and register at everywomansmarathon.com.